Chapter 13. People generally went in the middle with the horses and carts. It is true that the farthest end towards Whitechapel Church was not all paved, but even the part that was paved was full of grass also. But this need not seem strange, since the great streets within the city, such as Ludendale Street, Bishopsgate Street, Cornhill, and even the Exchange itself, had grass growing in them in several places. Neither cart or coach were seen in the streets from morning to evening, except some country carts to bring roots and beans, or peas, hay, and straw, to the market, and those but very few compared to what was usual. As for coaches, they were scarce used, but to carry sick people to the pest house, and to other hospitals, and some few to carry physicians to such places as they thought fit to venture to visit. For really coaches were dangerous things, and people did not care to venture into them, because they did not know who might have been carried in them last, and sick, infected people were, as I have said, ordinarily carried in them to the pest houses, and sometimes people expired in them as they went along. It is true, when the infection came to such a height as I have now mentioned, there were very few physicians which cared to stir abroad to sick houses, and very many of the most eminent of the faculty were dead, as well as the surgeons also. For now it was indeed a dismal time, and for about a month together, not taking any notice of the bills of mortality, I believe there did not die less than 1,500 or 1,700 a day, one day with another. One of the worst days we had in the whole time, as I thought, was in the beginning of September, when, indeed, good people began to think that God was resolved to make a full end of the people in this miserable city. This was at that time, when the plague was fully come into the eastern parishes. The parish of Aldgate, if I may give my opinion, buried above 1,000 a week for 2 weeks, though the bills did not say so many. But it surrounded me at so dismal a rate, that there was not a house in 20 uninfected in the Minories, in Houndsditch, and in those parts of Aldgate parish about the Butcher Row, and the alleys over against me. I say, in those places death reigned in every corner. Whitechapel parish was in the same condition, and though much less than the parish I lived in, yet buried near 600 a week by the bills, and in my opinion near twice as many. Whole families, and indeed whole streets of families, were swept away together, insomuch that it was frequent for neighbors to call to the bellman to go to such and such houses and fetch out the people, for that they were all dead. And, indeed, the work of removing the dead bodies by carts was now grown so very odious and dangerous that it was complained of that the bearers did not take care to dear such houses, where all the inhabitants were dead, but that sometimes the bodies lay several days unburied, till the neighboring families were offended with the stench, and consequently infected. And this neglect of the officers was such that the church wardens and constables were summoned to look after it, and even the justices of the hamlets were obliged to venture their lives among them to quicken and encourage them, for innumerable of the bearers died of the distemper, infected by the bodies they were obliged to come so near. And had it not been that the number of poor people who wanted employment, and wanted bread, as I have said before, was so great, that necessity drove them to undertake anything and venture anything, they would never have found people to be employed. And then the bodies of the dead would have lain above ground, and have perished and rotted in a dreadful manner. But the magistrates cannot be enough commended in this, that they kept such good order for the burying of the dead, that as fast as any of these they employed to carry off and bury the dead fell sick or died, as was many times the case, they immediately supplied the places with others, which, by reason of the great number of poor that was left out of business, as above, was not hard to do. This occasioned that notwithstanding the infinite number of people which died and were sick, almost altogether, yet they were always cleared away, and carried off every night, so that it was never to be said of London, that the living were not able to bury the dead. As the desolation was greater during those terrible times, so the amazement of the people increased, and a thousand unaccountable things they would do in the violence of their fright, as others did the same in the agonies of their distemper, and this part was very affecting. Some went roaring and crying and wringing their hands along the street. Some would go praying and lifting up their hands to heaven, calling upon God for mercy. I cannot say, indeed, whether this was not in their distraction, but, be it so, it was still an indication of a more serious mind, when they had the use of their senses, and was much better, even as it was, than the frightful yellings and cryings that every day, and especially in the evenings, were heard in some streets. I suppose the world has heard of the famous Solomon Eagle, an enthusiast. He, though not infected at all but in his head, went about denouncing of judgment upon the city in a frightful manner, sometimes quite naked, and with a pan of burning charcoal on his head. What he said, or pretended, indeed I could not learn. I will not say whether that clergyman was distracted or not, or whether he did it in pure zeal for the poor people, who went every evening through the streets of Whitechapel, and, with his hands lifted up, repeated that part of the liturgy of the church continually, "Spare us, good Lord, spare thy people, whom thou hast redeemed with thy most precious blood." I say, I cannot speak positively of these things, because these were only the dismal objects which represented themselves to me as I looked through my chamber windows, for I seldom opened the casements, while I confined myself within doors during that most violent raging of the pestilence, when, indeed, as I have said, many began to think, and even to say, that there would none escape. And indeed I began to think so too, and therefore kept within doors for about a fortnight, and never stirred out. But I could not hold it. Besides, there were some people who, notwithstanding the danger, did not omit publicly to attend the worship of God, even in the most dangerous times. And though it is true that a great many clergymen did shut up their churches, and fled, as other people did, for the safety of their lives, yet all did not do so. Some ventured to officiate, and to keep up the assemblies of the people by constant prayers, and sometimes sermons or brief exhortations to repentance and reformation, and this as long as any would come to hear them. And dissenters did the like also, and even in the very churches, where the parish ministers were either dead or fled. Nor was there any room for making difference at such a time as this was. It was indeed a lamentable thing, to hear the miserable lamentations of poor dying creatures calling out for ministers to comfort them, and pray with them, to counsel them, and to direct them, calling out to God for pardon and mercy, and confessing aloud their past sins. It would make the stoutest heart bleed to hear how many warnings were then given, by dying penitents to others, not to put off and delay their repentance to the day of distress, that such a time of calamity as this was no time for repentance, was no time to call upon God. I wish I could repeat the very sound of those groans, and of those exclamations, that I heard from some poor dying creatures, when in the height of their agonies and distress, and that I could make him that reads this hear, as I imagine I now hear them, for the sound seems still to ring in my ears. If I could but tell this part in such moving accents as should alarm the very soul of the reader, I should rejoice that I recorded those things, however short and imperfect. It pleased God that I was still spared, and very hearty, and sound in health, but very impatient of being pent up within doors without air, as I had been for 14 days or thereabouts. And I could not restrain myself, but I would go to carry a letter for my brother to the post house. Then it was indeed that I observed a profound silence in the streets. When I came to the post house, as I went to put in my letter, I saw a man stand in one corner of the yard and talking to another at a window, and a third had opened a door belonging to the office. In the middle of the yard lay a small leather purse with two keys hanging at it, with money in it, but nobody would meddle with it. I asked how long it had lain there. The man at the window said it had lain almost an hour, but that they had not meddled with it, because they did not know, but the person who dropped it might come back to look for it. I had no such need of money, nor was the sum so big, that I had any inclination to meddle with it, or to get the money at the hazard it might be attended with. So I seemed to go away, when the man who had opened the door said he would take it up, but so that if the right owner came for it, he should be sure to have it. So he went in, and fetched a pail of water, and set it down hard by the purse, then went again, and fetched some gunpowder, and cast a good deal of powder upon the purse, and then made a train from that which he had thrown loose upon the purse. The train reached about 2 yards. After this he goes in a third time, and fetches out a pair of tongs red hot, and which he had prepared, I suppose, on purpose, and first setting fire to the train of powder that singed the purse, and also smoked the air sufficiently. But he was not content with that, but he then takes up the purse with the tongs, holding it so long till the tongs burnt through the purse, and then he shook the money out into the pail of water, so he carried it in. The money, as I remember, was about 13 shillings, and some smooth groats and brass farthings. There might perhaps have been several poor people, as I have observed above, that would have been hardy enough to have ventured for the sake of the money, but you may easily see by what I have observed, that the few people who were spared were very careful of themselves at that time, when the distress was so exceeding great. Much about the same time I walked out into the fields towards Bow, for I had a great mind to see how things were managed in the river and among the ships, and as I had some concern in shipping, I had a notion that it had been one of the best ways of securing oneself from the infection to have retired into a ship, and musing how to satisfy my curiosity in that point, I turned away over the fields from Bow to Bromley, and down to Blackwall to the stairs which are there for landing or taking water. Here I saw a poor man walking on the bank, or sea wall, as they call it, by himself. I walked a while also about, seeing the houses all shut up. At last I fell into some talk, at a distance, with this poor man. First I asked him how people did thereabouts. "Alas, sir," apostrophe says he, "almost desolate, all dead or sick. Here are very few families in this part, or in that village pointing at Poplar, where half of them are not dead already, and the rest sick." Apostrophe then he pointing to one house, "There they are all dead," said he, "and the house stands open. Nobody dares go into it. A poor thief," says he, "ventured in to steal something, but he paid dear for his theft, for he was carried to the churchyard to last night." Apostrophe then he pointed to several other houses. "There," says he, "they are all dead, the man and his wife, and 5 children. There," says he, "they are shut up. You see a watchman at the door, and so of other houses." "Why," apostrophe says I, "what do you hear all alone?" Apostrophe "Why," apostrophe says he, "I am a poor, desolate man. It has pleased God I am not yet visited, though my family is, and one of my children dead." Apostrophe "How do you mean, then," apostrophe said I, "that you are not visited?" Apostrophe "Why," apostrophe says he, "that's my house," pointing to a very little, low-boarded house, "and there my poor wife and 2 children live." Apostrophe said he, "if they may be said to live, for my wife and 1 of the children are visited, but I do not come at them." Apostrophe and with that word I saw the tears run very plentifully down his face, and so they did down mine too, I assure you. "But," apostrophe said I, "why do you not come at them? How can you abandon your own flesh and blood?" Apostrophe "Oh, sir," apostrophe says he, "the Lord forbid. I do not abandon them. I work for them as much as I am able, and, blessed be the Lord, I keep them from want." And with that I observed he lifted up his eyes to heaven, with a countenance that presently told me I had happened on a man that was no hypocrite, but a serious, religious, good man, and his ejaculation was an expression of thankfulness that, in such a condition as he was in, He should be able to say his family did not want. Well, apostrophe says I, honest man, that is a great mercy as things go now with the poor. But how do you live, then, and how are you kept from the dreadful calamity that is now upon us all? Apostrophe apostrophe why, sir, apostrophe says he, I am a waterman, and there's my boat, says he, and the boat serves me for a house. I work in it in the day, and I sleep in it in the night, and what I get I lay down upon that stone, apostrophe says he, showing me a broad stone on the other side of the street, a good way from his house. And then, apostrophe says he, I halloo, and call to them till I make them hear, and they come and fetch it. Apostrophe, well, friend, apostrophe says I, but how can you get any money as a waterman? Does anybody go by water these times? Apostrophe yes, sir, says he, and the way I am employed there does. Do you see there, apostrophe says he, five ships lie at anchor, pointing down the river a good way below the town, and do you see, says he, eight or ten ships lie at the chain there, and at anchor yonder. Apostrophe apostrophe pointing above the town, all those ships have families on board, of their merchants and owners, and such like, who have locked themselves up and live on board, close shut in, for fear of the infection, and I tend on them to fetch things for them, carry letters, and do what is absolutely necessary, that they may not be obliged to come on shore. And every night I fasten my boat on board one of the ship's boats, and there I sleep by myself, and, blessed be God, I am preserved hitherto. Apostrophe, well, apostrophe said I, friend, but will they let you come on board after you have been on shore here, when this is such a terrible place, and so infected as it is? Apostrophe apostrophe why, as to that, apostrophe said he, I very seldom go up the ship's side, but deliver what I bring to their boat, or lie by the side, and they hoist it on board. If I did, I think they are in no danger from me, for I never go into any house on shore, or touch anybody, no, not of my own family, but I fetch provisions for them. Apostrophe, nay, apostrophe says I, but that may be worse, for you must have those provisions of somebody or other. And since all this part of the town is so infected, it is dangerous, so much as to speak with anybody, for the village, said I, is, as it were, the beginning of London, though it be at some distance from it. Apostrophe, that is true, apostrophe added he, but you do not understand me right, I do not buy provisions for them here. I row up to Greenwich, and buy fresh meat there, and sometimes I row down the river to Woolwich and buy there. Then I go to single farmhouses on the Kentish side, where I am known, and buy fowls and eggs and butter, and bring to the ships, as they direct me, sometimes one, sometimes the other. I seldom come on shore here, and I came now, only to call on my wife, and hear how my family do, and give them a little money, which I received last night. Apostrophe, poor man. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said I, and how much hast thou gotten for them? Apostrophe, I have gotten 4 shillings, apostrophe, said he, which is a great sum, as things go now with poor men. But they have given me a bag of bread too, and a salt fish and some flesh, so all helps out. Apostrophe well, apostrophe said I, and have you given it them yet? Apostrophe apostrophe, no, apostrophe said he, but I have called, and my wife has answered, that she cannot come out yet, but in half an hour she hopes to come, and I am waiting for her. Poor woman! Apostrophe says he, she is brought sadly down. She has a swelling, and it is broke, and I hope she will recover, but I fear the child will die, but it is the Lord apostrophe, here he stopped, and wept very much. Well, honest friend, apostrophe said I, thou hast a sure comforter, if thou hast brought thyself to be resigned to the will of God. He is dealing with us all in judgment. Apostrophe, oh, sir. Apostrophe apostrophe says he, it is infinite mercy, if any of us are spared, and who am I to repine? Apostrophe apostrophe, sayest thou so? Apostrophe apostrophe said I, and how much less is my faith than thine? apostrophe and here my heart smote me, suggesting how much better this poor man's foundation was on which he stayed in the danger than mine, that he had nowhere to fly, that he had a family, to bind him to attendance, which I had not, and mine was mere presumption, his a true dependence and a courage resting on God, and yet that he used all possible caution for his safety. I turned a little way from the man, while these thoughts engaged me, for, indeed, I could no more refrain from tears than he. At length, after some further talk, the poor woman opened the door and called, "Robert, Robert!" He answered, and bid her stay a few moments and he would come. So he ran down the common stairs to his boat and fetched up a sack, in which was the provisions he had brought from the ships, and when he returned he hallooed again. Then he went to the great stone which he showed me, and emptied the sack, and laid all out, everything by themselves, and then retired. And his wife came with a little boy to fetch them away, and called and said such a captain had sent such a thing, and such a captain such a thing, and at the end adds, "God has sent it all, give thanks to him." Apostrophe when the Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.